All right, welcome back, folks. It's the first episode of the new year. Normally, I wait until the end of the program to do this, but you know what? A good New Year's resolution for you would be to, if you enjoy this show, why don't you evangelize it on our behalf? Tell your friends about it. Maybe rate, subscribe, leave a review, and, you know, maybe it would even open up a dialogue between you and your friends. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize you had that grief. I got my own grief. Then they're going to try and dump their stuff onto you. It might backfire. But ultimately, I want more people to listen to this podcast. I really appreciate everybody who's been sending me messages and comments and, you know, keep doing that. But if you want to tell other people about it, sure wouldn't hurt to get more ears on this. And that's enough self-promotion out of the way. My name's Michael Walsh, by the way. And I hope you guys enjoy listening to this conversation. Last week, I sat down with Justin Thompson, and we talked about his dad, and I had a good time. Felt good to be back in the grief saddle. So, without further ado, this is episode 32 with Justin Thompson. So, for those of you who haven't listened to this program before, welcome to I'll Grieve You With This. That's the name of the show. But you already know this. You're well acquainted by now. Justin Thompson, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. All right, now we can do the introduction.
This is the introduction. I'm saying hello. This is just how conversations work.
Well, hi, Mike. Hi. It's good to be here.
You're gesturing wildly, by the way, as if you're orating. This is an audio medium.
It helps me get into the spirit performance. You know, it's my part bad. Of my process.
And you know what? I should not be judgmental because this is like a... the conversation is going to get to places that are going to be deeper than superficial. Mm-hmm. But yes, for the introduction purposes, you know, I have a real theme in the guests that I book in that you are a person that I know, but barely. You know,
yeah.
I think you could probably say the same about me.
Yeah, I think like we probably met like we'd seen each other around, but probably met like a year or so ago.
Yeah.
You know, seeing each other at shows and mics and stuff here in New York. But yeah, so I'm from South Carolina originally. That's where I grew up. I've lived in New York about 5-6 years now. And I moved here from Atlanta. So I guess you say I'm from New York by way of Atlanta, by way of South Carolina.
All right.
Yeah, comedy-wise, I first did stand-up in like college. Before that, you know, I grew up in a small town. It's called Hartsville, South Carolina.
Yeah, you've been doing stand-up for, what, like a decade? I think I saw you post a little throwback. So
something like
that.
You
got a little skin in the game. And I booked you because I happened to hear you tell your joke about your dead dad, which is, first of all, my condolences, of course. And that's kind of a prerequisite for you booked on this show. You have to have some grief, and I have to know about it. Yeah. And that's really helps the booking process when people make jokes about it. So,
well, you know, makes it easier to deal with. That's what we do as comedians. You know, we take the things in our life, you know, and then turn it into something that hopefully people can relate to. Hopefully people can laugh at. We can laugh at it. And it, you know, certainly is part of the process. It makes things easier. We make sense of a world that makes no sense. All that stuff.
Yeah. So, I think we've spent enough time in the shallow end. Tell me about your dead dad.
Okay, well, can we talk about comedy more? No, all right, well, we can. So, you know, my dad was a guy, he was a man, he fathered me. He passed in about 9 years ago, 8 years ago. I think I was 25 at the time, so... Yeah, like 9 years ago, and I don't know, it's kind of a shock, but his health had been in decline, so it wasn't, you know, super abrupt. In life, you know, he was definitely someone who was funny. His friends regarded him as being funny, and that wasn't, you know, lost on me. He was a guy who was like, you know, only focusing on trying to be cool to people and like to make people laugh. And then, you know, as I get older, you know, and process more of the things that I've dealt with in my life, understand, you know, like where he came from and the upbringing he had, the people he lost.
So where was he from?
South Carolina, you know, near Hartsville, small towns. Yeah, so...
Did you and him have a good relationship?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it was as good as either of us would have liked, you know, in hindsight. I'd say it was better when I was younger. Then, you know, my parents separated. And then after that, like, things were, you know, on the rocks, so to say.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I am the youngest of three.
Okay.
So I have an older brother and an older sister. So I feel like their experience is different, you know?
Yeah, of course. But I'm here to ask you about your experience. Let down the pretense. Listen, how'd your dad die?
So my dad... died, it was a heart attack, but wasn't the first one, and maybe a third, honestly. I think the third time was the charm. But my dad, before he died, he was he had cancer, and he had cancer in his jaw and his mouth and like his tongue.
Wow. How long did he have that for?
I'm not certain exactly the timeline here. I think by the time they caught it was already pretty bad. He had to undergo like a very serious surgery to remove, you know, like part of the bone in his jaw, remove part of his tongue, removed like,
wow.
And he was such a bad alcoholic that, you know, while undergoing this like 24-hour procedure, like he was going through withdrawals and hadn't, his doctors seemingly didn't understand how severe, you know, his alcoholism was, you know? So, it was really a tough time to go through that. And then, you know, he was ended up being in the hospital for like a week. It was much longer. He was like, it was about a week before I think he, you know, kind of came back to, and you know, we'd had health scares before. He had had a heart attack when I was in junior high and, you know, didn't take the best care of himself. Drank a lot, smoked, who knows what else. Probably was living off of, you know.
What did he do occupationally?
He was, I guess I could say he was in sales, but he managed an auto parts shop, and then he managed like a tire repair business.
Okay.
So he worked in, you know, cars, you know, either fixing cars or selling parts or managing the people who were fixing the cars.
Would you say, alcoholism sounds like defined him. Was that why your parents split up?
Yeah, I think ultimately, yeah. Like, it's pretty easy to say. Like, and then the contrast is like my mom, who doesn't drink at all, is very, you know, devout in her faith, goes to church like three times a week, and, you know, never, I think I'm like in my life, I could probably count on one hand the times I've seen her like have a glass of wine, you know. She just never really cared for it. Probably didn't smoke pot when she was younger either. Maybe tried it once or twice. So my mom's like very straight laced. My dad, kind of a wild guy. And
how did they meet? I mean, this doesn't need to be extremely biographical,
but
I kind of want a little more insight into your dad's character because, I mean, what you're telling me, I'm getting some outline of it, but...
I think the thing is, the more important thing is just, the thing I've come to understand, like, you know, as a kid, hearing these stories about how he suffered loss and the things he had gone through as a young, you know, person, like, when he was around 12 or 13, he lost his older brother to a gun accident. And then I think around like age 18, 19, he lost his dad. And then by the time he was like 23, 24, he lost his mom. And, you know, I think he never recovered from that, you know? And
yeah, just, I mean, like, that sounds like some tough blows. Did he ever discuss?
No, not at all. Of course not. You know, he was cracking jokes. He would never like let on, you know, that. But he had the pain and the hurt.
Of course. I mean, that's...
You know, drink.
And, I'm sure that those two were intercorrelated.
Yeah.
So, did you find out this type of stuff after he died, or...?
Like I said, there were stories. Like, my mom told me about it when I was younger. He had never... I don't think he ever talked about it to me. He may have with my brother, and more than likely did with him and my sister. But no, it was just like stories. Like, oh yeah, he had a brother. There's an uncle that you never got to meet, you know? Never got to meet that set of grandparents. They were gone like before my parents were married. And so my mom meets my dad, I think through a friend or at a party or maybe at a bar, even though she, you know, never really drank. Maybe then, you know, when she's like in her early 20s. She probably did a little more. They meet, they start dating pretty quickly. Then after, you know, a few months of that, like my mom becomes like close with his mother. And it's like this big, like deathbed promise that she's like, all right, you're like good for my son. You have to take care of Jimmy, you know,
a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And then my mom like fully like committed to that. And she's like, I promise this woman, you know, I'm a, you know, I'm doing the good, you know, thing. And for my whole life, they tried to make it work. Keep trying over and over. Even after they divorced, there were times where they were trying to make it work. And, you know, I think there's something I've appreciated about that, you know, thinking like, oh, well, my parents are going to get a divorce. Finally, my life's going to be so much simpler and easier now. No, that's not true. So after they got divorced, I think that's when, you know, when I became a teenager, they eventually, you know, they were seeing other people, and then it made it harder to spend more time with him. And when he got remarried, like, there's like a fork, you know, like where after that, like, you know, it was hard to talk to him, and he was with someone who enabled his drinking, you know, at that time, or not enabled, but was indifferent. So, you know, I'd call him up on the phone and, you know, talk to him for like a few minutes. And you know how it is, like, if you're talking to an alcoholic, like after like 3-4 minutes, all right, it's just the same conversation, you know?
Has that been the experience with your dad your whole life?
Not when I was younger, you know? It was like when I was, again, in my teens and early 20s, that's when I'm like, all right, well, I got to call him early so I can have a,
right,
you know, chat
with
him.
You got to hit him before 3 p.m., 4 p.m.
Yeah,
that's tough. Okay, so that's got to be difficult to deal with. And then when he's with someone else who's like sort of part of that, did you ever make, I mean, that's a tough conversation to have. Did you ever tell him like, hey man, what are you doing? Or did he know? Or was it just sort of like the elephant in the room that everybody was like?
I think I never, you know, broached it with him, you know, like even, you know, in that teenage years of my life or in my early 20s, like kind of being aware of it, being aware of it, an issue, you know, and then his declining health. And I think maybe like after he finally, like, you know, was like, all right, I've got cancer, I've got to have this surgery. The surgery, you know, he almost didn't live through it because of the alcoholism. I think after that, you know, there might have been, there was some words said about, you know, hey, we're glad you're here, we want you to still be here. But, and then after that, like, it really, within like a year, you know, maybe it was like a year or two, year and a half, like, he was gone after that. You know, he had a heart attack, and then, like, had, like, pulled over on the side of the road and, like, died in his truck. It's like, the fucking, it's a tragedy, you know? And
yeah, it's fucking tough, man. And like, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, like I said, like now knowing like, all right, how much he had been impacted by the deaths and pain and things he couldn't overcome in his life, and you know, it becomes that generational trauma or whatever. And then also, you know, as you get older and you learn more about yourself, you like think about how the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You start to understand your parents better. Like even, you know, in these years where I haven't been able to speak with him, you know, like I'm thinking about him. I'm thinking about my life and understanding myself and understanding him more. And that's kind of a trip.
Yeah, no, I think I also sort of got a deepening of my curiosity and my understanding of the levels to my dad's, whatever was going on with him. It took me a couple of years after he died to start. Maybe I'm really getting curious about 2 or 3 years afterwards. So you're 9 years out now.
Yeah.
Did you, for the first couple of years, did you think about it much? And actually, you know what?
Yeah.
Let me back up.
Yeah.
Comedy-wise, though. Yeah. Your dad died like 9 years ago, so you were doing stand-up at that time. And this seems kind of a moot point, but one of my questions I typically ask, did your father ever see you do stand-up?
No. I don't think he ever got to. He knew I was a comedian, you know. He would like ask me about it. He's like, oh, you're doing comedy? How's it going? You know, you're doing shows? And, you know, he's funny. He would again, I remember him like cracking jokes. You know, I'd like go, like even in high school, like I'd go hang out with him at his shop, like after school. Cause like, all right, I'm done at like 3 or 3:30, whenever high school ends. I'm like, he's gonna be there till 6. This is the time to go catch him when he's not drinking, you know. So I, you know, and then someone comes in, everyone, you know, would, you know, greet him. They knew him, they loved him. He cracked jokes, make people laugh, and like that's, you know, the fonder memories that, you know, I hold on to. It's like, oh yeah, like he was someone who had a lot of pain and hurt, but like I said, he wanted everyone else to like feel good, you know.
It sounds,
and like that's,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, well, I understand myself and where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're doing almost a little bit of like, you know, you're very empathetic about what he must have been going through, mm-hmm. too. But it's almost like an avatar of like processing his grief for him to sort of view through the lens why he was the way that he was.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I was, you know, there's all the stages of grief. I'm sure everyone talks about it. But like,
so tell me about, how did you find out? Where were you and what happened? You get the phone call?
Yeah, I got a phone call. So if this was 2015, you know, which coming up on 10 years of it. Yeah, I'd been doing comedy a few years. I'd started in South Carolina. I'd done it a few times in college, but there wasn't really stand-up comedy around anywhere there at the time. And I graduated, kind of kicked around the tires for a year. Then I moved to Atlanta. So I was in Atlanta at that time. So I'd been in Atlanta like a year or two. And that's pretty much when I like really, you know, felt like I started comedy. Like, all right, I graduated college in 2011. And that's when I'm like, all right, I really want to do this comedy thing, but there's not really a lot of it here. So I was driving, you know, hours to go do open mics and moved to Atlanta. I was in Atlanta. I remember like I was hanging out with some people, non-comedy friends, some guys that at a restaurant I worked with. We were like going to a grocery store to get some drinks and some booze or whatever. And then like, you know, my mom calls me and she's like hesitant to like share the news, you know?
Of course.
And she's like saying, you know, your dad, you know, is not well or something's, you know, she's not really, you know what I mean? She's kind of skirting around it. She's like, you need to come home. She's like, but if you're out with your friends and you've been drinking, like just come home tomorrow morning, you know? And then I'm like, well, that was a weird call. And then my friends are like, yeah, are you okay? What's going on? And then like, then another call like 5 or 10 minutes later, she's like, I'm sorry, I couldn't say it. You know, I didn't want to, you know, and then she like gives me the news and she's like stressing like, all right, come home, but not tonight. Like don't drive tonight, wherever you're at, get someone to pick you up to take you home. Like you shouldn't
be. You were already drunk at this point?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I was on my first drink of the night, you know, but
because God, that would be a fucked up news to get while you're like already,
so
while
thank
you're
God,
on drugs
like, if
or
the
something.
Call had come, like 2 hours later, you know.
Right. Okay. So,
and yeah, so you know what receiving like that phone call is like, or I don't know, were you in the room?
I was in the house, but my dad died in the living room. I was asleep upstairs, and my mom woke me up and told me. But yeah, it's, you know, it's. It's wow. Like loss of gravity type stuff.
Yeah, yeah, like the floor falls out beneath you, and you know.
Yeah, so you were with your friends, presumably in a parking lot.
Yeah, either like we were either in the, maybe like I was coming out of the grocery store, you know, at the first call, and then we had made it to my friend's apartment during, you know, when I got the second call and really got the news. And, you know, like, these are guys I work with. Like, we were friends, but not like, you know what I mean? Like, super close. It was like, hey, we're getting a beer. And, like, God bless them, you know, for how, like, supportive they were. And,
good.
You know, I still remember, like, one of them, you know, he's just saying, like, well, you know, I'm sure he was very proud of you. And that was just like, that was like, then boom, tears, you
know?
Like,
yeah, yeah. No, that's what you needed to hear, I bet.
Yeah. That's what it, I mean, that's what I needed to hear. And it was. So, yeah, I'm like, all right, well, we're going to hang out and drink for a while. Sorry if it's not as fun as we had planned, guys.
You're just playing beer pong.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, I mean, actually, you know what we were going to drink? Like, probably like a fucking Tuesday night. We're going to have mimosas.
Oh, wow.
Very funny, like, random, like, thing. I think we had some beer as well, but we're like, all right, well, we'll run in there and grab some OJ for this, like, cheap champagne that you already have or whatever, you know, like
brunch themed.
So drinking a mimosa while you get the call that your dad died.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy, man. That's a real tough one.
Yeah. So,
and then what? So did you spend the night? You crash on the couch, go see your mom in the morning?
I think I called my roommate at the time, who was my best friend, you know, and I'm like, hey, man, here's what's happening. I feel like I'm good to drive home, but I probably shouldn't, you know, like, I don't know. So either he came to get me or I, you know, Uber was around then, like maybe got just a car to take me back to my place or something. You know, I just remember calling my friend and then like, maybe he drove me back to get the car the next morning And then I drive from Atlanta back to Hartsville, South Carolina, which is like, you know, 4-hour drive. Like, I would have dropped everything and done it that night, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand too, like, the concern of the parent and being like, you shouldn't drive in that emotional state, you know, a long drive behind the wheel, even if you had only one drink.
I'm like, no, of course not. And your body would be in shock just from all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe not being paying attention to things.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been tough on your mom. She probably has a whole different way of grieving because this is a person that's, you know,
father of children, ex-husband, still in love with the guy. Still, like I said, they were trying to make it work.
Wow.
Even, you know, after their divorce, you know, even, I don't know, like, even after, like, they were seeing other people, like, they were still, like, kind of talking about maybe the idea.
They just couldn't quit it.
They couldn't make it, you know. My dad would never quit drinking.
Did he ever even attempt?
I think he did. I'm sure she tried to get him, too, and he, I'm sure, tried. I think you know, there's probably meetings, there's probably like counts, like at least some form of, you know, what counseling is in to a small town. It's like, it's talking to the preacher, you know, like, it's like they're not saying,
yeah, here, have some wine, we'll talk this over.
Yeah, pray that you won't want to drink anymore. So yeah, really different grieving process. And
were your siblings living in the area at the time?
My brother was still in our hometown. My sister was in Charleston, you know, so it was like a little closer for her, like 3 hours, you know, to get back. And yeah, so I, you know, just remember, like, you know, like, all right, well, I'm gonna be just leave Atlanta for like a week or whatever, you know, go back to my hometown like the next day. I'm gone for at least a week, let both of my jobs know, hey, here's what's happening. And they're like, all right, cool. Yeah, whatever. Take as much time as you need. We'll work it out. And, yeah. So then, you know, go spend time with my family, figure out the arrangements that need to be made.
Yeah. What,
deal with his new, wife.
Was there end of life type shit? Sorry, like will stuff that had to be like sort of sorted out?
Yeah, actually. So, because there were things that were left in the will or possessions of his that should have gone to us that, like, you know, weren't found or weren't around. And then it kind of came this dispute between us and, like, his wife. And, you know,
yeah,
that
kind of
thing, that kind of shit dragged on. And, you know, and my mom was, like, the one, like, kind of pushing us to, like, fight for it. And now I, like, oh, I appreciate that. It's like, yeah, like, we should have, like, not that he, you know, he had a, he didn't have much to leave to us, you know?
Sentimental value.
Exactly. Like, we should have some of these keepsakes, like jewelry, and, you know, he had this, you know, house, was sold, got a little bit of money, split between the kids after paying for some of these other things.
Yeah.
There was a vehicle, you know, that was going to go to my older brother, and apparently, like, I don't know, man, like, the new wife, I'm not saying stepmom, his new wife, you know, like,
right,
it was like trashed, like the vehicle was trashed, it needed to be cleaned and repaired, you know. It's like, all right, well, if they're giving it to these his sorry ass kids or whatever.
I'm assuming you don't keep up with the new wife.
No, I haven't spoke to her since, you know, like there was maybe like one last day where, like, I think we went to his house to like grab some things, and then, you know, the time's gone by.
Tell me about the funeral. Or was there one?
Yeah, there was a funeral. He was buried in the ground. I don't know. I can't remember too much of it. You know, it was a really short and sweet thing. You know, didn't...
Did you speak at all?
No, I didn't speak.
It's weird because you're kind of the center of the attention, but it's like being the bell of the shitty ball. Like, everybody's looking at you, and everybody feels like they need to come up and sort of say something to you, but there's like three variations that you can hear, and 500 people tell you them at. Did anyone say anything to you that sort of felt like it was supposed to be consoling, but it was just kind of tone deaf?
God, I wish, man, because that would be the thing I laugh about, you know?
Like, do you remember? So, obviously, it was a joyless week. Do you remember the first time that you did laugh after he died?
No, I can't. You know, I'm sure there was, like, some time, like, I remember, like, staying up with my brother and my sister and, like, talking and sharing stories, you know? So, in that, like, emotional state where it kind of vacillates between laughing and crying, you know, like, remembering, like, this and laughing about that. But now, you know, it's like none of those details have really stuck around. You know, I wish, I'd taken away more, but like it was a pretty small funeral and it was pretty quick.
I mean, they're not taken away. It's kind of like, well, it's a blurry week.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, sometimes, you know, I have same, not necessarily of like, sometimes you'll compare notes with someone who was there and, and they're like, whoa, I totally forgot that that happened. And then they remind you of something that you did and you're like, holy shit. And you're like, oh yeah, it's all coming back to me. And you're like, well, I guess I guess my headspace was kind of handicapped for a little while.
Well, it's
there.
Like, you know, going to my friend's wedding, you know, and then I see how, all right, the parents of the bride are split up and then the mother of the bride has a boyfriend that's younger than her daughter who's getting married. That's the crazy things you remember when you're like, you know, tertiary or secondary to like the event.
Yeah.
You know, at a funeral when it's like someone close to you, it's like if there's anything weird or goofy like that for me, it's just like, yeah, it's out of the window. But yeah, there had to be things that were funny about it. Like the things me and my brother would laugh about in the like the ride home after the funeral. I'm sure. Like
I'm not asking if there's not anything. You don't need to try to scrape something off the from the barrel of your brain. But some people have like, oh yeah, someone told. They're like, oh, they called me fat when they were trying to give me condolences. You know, stuff like that. But listen, you clearly don't have that moment. I see your brain. You're like, let me think about this. Maybe I can. No.
Yeah. We don't have to force it. Yeah, you're right. Good call.
Memory is already so subjective. We don't need to make up new ones. Do you remember when you first decided to start making jokes about it on stage? Because, you know, it's been close to a decade now.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, there was an instinct to probably like comment on it in a pithy and somewhat crass way, being like, making light of it in like a way it's like, yeah, whatever, you know, this didn't really affect me that much. But it came about later, you know, certainly when I started to write more jokes about it and talk about it more. And I probably mentioned it, you know, more like around like 3-4 years after is when I started probably getting more comfortable talking about it. Like I certainly wasn't in a rush to, and even now in what I do in comedy, I feel like isn't hyper personal. You know, it's a lot of like there are jokes that are taken from facts and observations and details about my life, but I'm rarely like, all right, well, let me break it down and give you a story about, you know, something foundational about my being and identity.
Sure. I mean, my stuff is not exactly autobiographical. My jokes are pretty, like, sort of absurd one-liner type stuff, but I do have stuff about my dad.
Yeah, or I'd even, like, broach the subject and say things like, so my dad's dead, and I don't know how to tell people. I guess that's one way, you know, and, like, immediately I'm commenting on, like, I know people are going to be uncomfortable as soon as I say this. And then, you know, the jokes have changed over the years, but the thing I appreciate is, like... Like, I remember it being, like, a few years after, so, like, 4 or 5, I'm, like, I'll still sometimes do the bit, but it's, like, you know, how long can you use that as an excuse for, like, breaking up with someone? You know, like, hey, I'm going through a lot right now, you know, my dad just died. Wasn't that, like, 5 years ago? Well, the grieving process is not linear, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fucking really funny.
Denial, anger, vibing, did that for a while, bargaining, acceptance.
That is kind of, no, I mean, there's humor there, but there's so much reality to that where I'm like, I'm coming up on, geez, I can't, it's almost 4.5, coming up on 5 years since my dad died. I'm like, well, first of all, I'm like, am I still talking about this? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm just barely scratching the surface. But the other part is I'm like, damn, it's been 4.5 years. Feels like it's been like maybe 18 months. You know what I mean? And then I guess that a lot of life is like that. And then you're just like, oh, now I'm turning 40. Oh,
that's the passage of time. That's everything. How do you slow down time? How do you make it last? How do you cherish it? How do you be present? How do you... Show people that you care. Show people that you appreciate them. You know, that's the shit you think about.
But to bring it back to it, it does seem like, oh, maybe there's a shelf life on how long my grief is relevant to others. Yeah. And then you go, what? There's no expiration date on any of this shit.
Exactly.
Especially for people that haven't even started to open the can. You know what I mean? You see people that are like, my dad died 40 years ago. It's his birthday. They have one tear and then they cough and they say, excuse me, sorry about that. And you go, wow, this is something you haven't even begun to process.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the whole theme of, like I said, like, you know, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years in, like every, like, you know, the grieving process isn't completed. You know, even in acceptance, you're still in it, you know what I mean? So yeah, and it changes. You will like think back on like a random thing from your childhood that you hadn't thought about in a while. And then like you think about, you know, your dad, and then, you know, you'll still have those moments even years in where you're like, oh, wait, I can't just call him, you know?
Yeah, no, of course.
And that was the other bit. Still will sometimes do, but it's not a regular. I was like, well, you know, I wish I could call my dad and tell him one more time that I love him and ask him about this weird noise my car is making. Because that was most of the time we'd talk. But now I realize that I can actually, on the other hand, I can call AAA and ask them to tell me that they're proud of me.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then I do the act out and all that.
No, that's a good bit.
So, through those jokes, which, like I said, didn't start to come about till 4 or 5 years after. It's like I started kind of talking about it more, and it's still like a thing I don't typically do, you know, especially in, you know, here we're doing 10-minute sets. I'm like, if I'm, you know, up there a while and, you know, can have the moment to stop being so silly or goofy and then, like, be personal and real, like, you know, absolutely.
One thing I've noticed, and I don't know if it was the case for you, but recently I've been seeing so many people, and it happened to me, as soon as my dad died, I went and told jokes about it, and now I'm like, oh man, it seems pretty, like a natural human reaction, at least among comedians, and I, you know, to get on stage and go, weird week, you know, my mom's dead.
Yeah, I mean, we're expected to commodify our pain and struggle.
I don't even think that's necessarily that. I think it's, I don't even think it's commodifying. I think it's...
I mean, it's not in a way, but you know what I mean?
I think it's, this is a thing that I need to tell to everyone because I need you guys to know that this is happening to me. And I'm couching it in punchlines because that's the only way I couch anything. But more than anything, I need you to know, here's a giant flag that says dead dad.
Yeah.
And, but of course, there's jokes. But it's very much like, hey, I need you to know this about what's happening in my life. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's just like... You know, try the veal, tip your waitstaff type shit. You know, you got to couch it in a little bit of levity, but I think it's very much not for the audience, it's for the performer.
Yeah, yeah. That as well, you know, I think, and as, it's what we do with life. You know, things happen to us, we, you know, try and find the humor in it, and especially when you're going through something like that, you're like, there is a relief in, you know, when you can make it funny and you can make it something that people connect to and they laugh about, and then... It's funny, too, because, you know, for me in my mid-20s when it happened, it's like, well, most of my peers in comedy or outside, like, you know, I was in the minority of it. Most of my friends had their dads. Now, as I get older, it's more of a shared experience that I meet other people
having.
And
now you're kind of like, hey, welcome to the party. We've been expecting you. You're like, I've been here for 9 years.
But having had that experience, I am happy that I can be... possibly more supportive or hopefully, you know, a better friend to people through that.
It's like realizing that you have a whole different tribe of people that you didn't even know existed until you're part of that tribe, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, and everyone will be eventually on, you know, unless it's you first.
Unless you die before us.
Yeah, some people have all the luck. My friend from Atlanta, Dedrick Flynn says Simba Squad.
Simba Squad?
Yeah.
Oh, because the...
Losing his dad.
Because we were all young princes with our dead fathers.
Yeah. And
we just can't wait to be king.
That's right. I'm not sad. Anyway, so I think about... I don't know, but then, you know, just the idea of grief is also... something that shifts. You know, you go through life, other people you know pass. You think about, like... You know, your mind might slip for a minute and you're like, oh, I wish I could just call them, you know, and say something or ask a question or hear another story or something I don't know. And then those moments where you, like, you know, for like the half second until you remember, you know, like, and then it continues to happen to me, you know, and...
What, you forgetting that they're not there?
Yeah, or like, or, you know, do you see your dad when you dream at night? Does that happen to you?
Every now and again, but it's, but it's never with any clarity whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're grocery shopping and it's not like I have a dream where I'm like, oh, in my dream, he never died. You know what I mean? So it's not like I'm like, oh, isn't this so weird? It's more like, hey, Dad, could you pass me that thing?
Yeah.
It's not like central to the dream itself. But that is weird.
Right. And then, yeah, and then you wake up and you're like, oh, well, you know, or it can be that, or sometimes, you know, for me, it's like, oh, wow, I like to see him again. And like in the dream, being aware, like, all right, this isn't, you know, like, you know, am I lucid dreaming? Or am I like aware that I'm dreaming? Is this like, I know it's my own subconscious talking back to me in the form of him to tell me something maybe I need to hear, or maybe it's not that deep. Maybe it's past the peace. And, you know, I've also like come to recognize those emotions, that grief isn't just tied to, you know, death. You mourn the loss of childhood, or you mourn the loss of like your parents selling your childhood home,
no,
or
sure.
you, a relationship that ends, or a friendship that ends, or, you know, it's like, oh, this is familiar, you know, in a way. Like, you think about, you know, like mourning the relationship my parents, you know, should have had, or like seeing a friend or my partner who come from seemingly much more functional nuclear family, you know, like, why am I, you know, why does that like strike something in me emotionally about this feeling of loss of what I didn't have, or what was taken away, you know, or, you know, the instability, you know, of the upbringing, you know, I had, like, you know, it's like, all right, well, I can't change it. It's not gonna be different. It's something that's made me who I am. And you end up in art and life, whether it's something that you turn into art, or just something that you process through it, or, you know, you realize the things that, you know, make you you, or what bring you value. Those are the things that, even your quirks or your flaws, you know, your friends still see that and love you. And that's like, they think of you, and I don't know what I'm rambling here.
Do you think about grief and death a lot, or just in the context of the fact that we're having this conversation?
Yeah, well, as long as people I know keep dying, I'm still going to think about
it. Hey, you keep setting them up. I'll keep knocking them down. No, but I mean, it sounds like you're a very contemplative person. This isn't something that you're just thinking about for the first time, but I'm wondering, is this something that's on your, like, do you think about your dad often, or is it just like, oh, when you hear a song, or when you wake up, or is it just...
Yeah, any AC/DC song, to be honest with you, man, I'm like, fuck yeah, my dad loved AC/DC. Hell yeah, dude. You know, shit like that.
Yeah, they love that music up in heaven.
So I don't know. What is often? I don't know. How often does the average person think about it? Do I think about it more? Probably. Do I... is this like something that hangs over me all the time? No.
Sounds like you have a pretty active brain about it.
I guess so. You know, I like to think I'm aware that I'm introspective. I'm aware that I'm like still processing, you know, my childhood. Like, you know, I'm fucking meditating. I'm in therapy. I'm taking hallucinogens. You know what I mean? Like, I'm, you know, there's on a level that's always there.
Yeah, no, of course.
It's not something I think I obsess over or want to, you know, think over. You know, I try to have gratitude and presence and all that bullshit.
Yeah. Can't be too, you gotta make a little joke at the end just to make sure people at home know that we're still like dudes, you know?
Yeah, come on, man.
We're like there's Kleenex on the table, but we're not, you know, kidding. No, I mean, it's good to be present about that type of stuff. Do you think you probably, I would imagine that was a shift in perspective once you lost your dad.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like, I think of like the resentment I had, you know, how I just now spoke about like those feelings of my family, the upbringing, what was difficult or unstable about my childhood, you know, probably manifested itself in this early, in my teenage and early, you know, adulthood life. Like, there was a resentment and there was anger, and, you know, I was like mad that, you know, my dad like couldn't just fucking stop drinking and like, you know, be around more, my parents couldn't just fucking make it work, because they kept trying, and, you know, I'm like, well, why are they repeating the experiment? That's insanity. But, you know, and when he died, it's like all that fucking goes away. It's like, all right, I can't be mad. You know, there's no more resentment. There's no more, you know, anger. Like,
you know, is there none? Because I feel like one of the
for me,
sure. I feel like one of the less discussed aspects of grief is that, like, it's totally normal to have anger for people that are dead.
Yeah.
And to go, oh, I guess I never get to work that one out with that person. I have a person I fell out with that at the time was a good friend of mine. He did something that I didn't really see as forgivable, but I cut him out of my life. He didn't do anything to me personally, but he just did something that I thought was made him a bad person. Mm-hmm. And then he fucking died in a bicycle accident. And I go, well, shit. Guess we're never going to have that conversation. We were kicking the can down the road a little while.
Yeah. That'll happen, you know,
and then you go, well, it's also okay to be angry with someone even though they're not here anymore. And listen,
you're right.
If all that really did go out once he died, but the impact on your childhood of him not being able to get it together, that's not like something that fucking was just expunged from his, you know, search history as soon as he died. That's all that shit's still reverberating with you.
Yeah.
Probably for the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still working to understand it, make sense of it, be funny about it, be a better person, you know, mostly. But I wouldn't say it all went away, but it was just like a shifting of the tides, you know, to where, like I said, just like that, less frustration, less anger, significantly less resentment, and, you know, sadness and mourning. And then over time, what I've come to, you know, like I talked about earlier, like understanding more, you know, like understanding him, understanding why he was the way he was, and appreciating the father I had. Like, there was no doubt, there was love, you know, like there was never any, you know, doubt about, you know, if I called him, like he's gonna answer or call me back. If I needed him to like drop what he was doing and like come pick me up or help me and I'm like far away, like, you know, it's like there was a consistency there. But, you know, it's just like being mad that, like, or like, you know, like, I mean, like I said, like, oh, I'm calling him but he's drunk and now after like 5 minutes he's asking me the same question, like, yeah, like that kind of frustration, annoyance on that small level, all of that definitely, you know, seemed to subside.
Well, yeah, I mean, even the things that probably annoy you about people will be, you'll be reminded of in death, and you go, damn, I can't even, they're not even here for me to resent them.
Yeah.
And that in itself is kind of a loss.
Yeah.
In its own weird way. Cause that was part of the routine.
Yeah. It was part of the, you know, the routine. And, year by year, you know, you go through the holidays, you know, you remember a birthday, you remember the day of a death.
Yeah. Do you do anything on those days?
Not particularly, you know, like, usually it's a moment of contemplation, you know, by myself. Like, there's no ritual or thing to do. You know, like, I'm far away from my family at the time. Me and my brother, did go and like visit his, gravestone, the, you know, that plot where they put all the bodies, and, you know, we've done that together and, you know, put some flowers there. And like, even in those moments, it's like, you know, I'm like, all right, well, I'm with my brother. It's like, all right, well, I'm not gonna say too much, or, you know, gotta still be cool. We're dudes.
Yeah, you know, you don't even let it all out.
So, like I said, it feels personal. And still around the holidays, when I see my brother and my sister, like, we'll inevitably like end up talking about him and sharing like stories and frustrations too, good and bad.
And they probably have maybe other memories that you, I don't know how much younger you are than them, but they might shed more light on his memories about him.
Exactly. Yeah. And absolutely. And, you know, and there's been times too where I'm like talking to my mom, I'm like, well, tell me more about how you met dad, or tell me like a story about when you guys, you know, like, and appreciate that she's around and that I can still like I said, like they had divorced, they had been separated, for a long time, but still like they were close, you know, in a way, like, you know. And
you and your mom are on good terms.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're very different people, but, you know, we're on good terms. I love her very much. She has done so much for me, and, you know, has like, I think, you know, she understands me now a lot more, or like appreciates letting me, like, you know, like, all right, you got to go do your own thing. I wish you, like, you know, if it was up to her, I would never have left my hometown, or I would have moved back after college. And, you know, I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to go live in a big city, which is very scary, but I'm going to be fine. I'm going to not have kids at a reasonable young age, and I'm going to figure this out. You know, it's very much like the path I'm on in life, you know, and you or every comedian or artist, it's like, you know, if you're not coming from like a family of people who are inclined that way, it's like, you know, you're kind of going against the current, the curve, like, especially coming from like a very small town, yeah. You know, it's like no one fucking like my most, cousins,
yeah,
like,
no,
you
get.
Know, like all of them still live pretty close, you know,
yeah.
Everyone's just working and I mean, starting to get married and have kids.
They probably make consistent salaries.
Oh,
most,
yeah.
Most conventional background parents aren't like, oh, a career that pays in drink tickets. That
yeah,
seems like
yeah.
Great. No backup plan. Oh, but you seem funny enough to make it work.
Yeah. Or they're like, well, I don't think you're very funny, but good luck. Hope
sure.
You're having fun. If other people, you know, but like I've taken my mom see me do shows.
That's nice.
And she's like, you know, seeing like other people laughing. I mean, like, oh, okay. Yeah. Or
she
like,
doesn't
watch,
get it, but
yeah.
She gets it.
Yeah. Like, or she like seen videos online and like, you know, like she's like, well, it's a little blue. It's a little, you know, but
yeah.
She's like, well, I remember like even just now the holiday. She's like, oh, I remember this joke about your grandma that you told. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. I haven't told that one in a long time. But, you know, it's also funny as a comedian, like people who saw you years ago, the things they remember about you and your
yeah,
comedy.
Yeah.
Are like things that you don't even consider. You don't even
sure.
Think about jokes you've written.
Like, oh,
told
I threw
and
that
forgotten.
Joke. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. So, I mean, that's the greatest shame. My dad doesn't get to see how good at comedy I've gotten.
Yeah. Well, his loss. What was your father's name?
James, Jimmy, Jimbo. I know, right?
Jimbo.
Yeah.
The auto parts manager.
That's right. And
so Jim Thompson, huh?
Jim, I can't imagine James, Jim, Jimmy, Jimbo, like it went by all of those and you know, and I've met people like going back home and like people who've like said they knew him, you know, it's a small town, you know, and in high school, like I remember like meeting people who were like, oh yeah, who's your, you know, who's your dad, and I'm like, oh yeah, and they know him because yeah, so like I said, people, you know, speaking highly, saying they, you know, that means a lot, I think, you know, like people, when someone you don't even, you've never met or you don't know, or even years later, they're like mentioning that they knew him and, you know, they liked him and, you know, miss him or whatever it is. Like, yeah, like that's.
Yeah,
no. That's the positive things that I you know focus on now. Like I said, he was funny. Like he wanted to make people laugh. To his own detriment, didn't you know process his feelings and what he went through. I'm doing that with my own now and the ones I've inherited. Also, you know, as someone who like I'm like, oh yeah, like well, my dad definitely had ADHD and wasn't treated for that. and I didn't start receiving treatment. You know, until like my mid-20s around the time, you know, I lost him. And then, oh, learning about codependency. Like, that fucking opens up like a wall in your mind.
That's
you
a
know?
Huge lesson to learn.
Yeah. And then like realizing, oh man, well, when I started reading about codependency, man, like I started thinking about my mom and my dad completely differently and understanding like the way I was programmed on relationships and, you know, people who care and love and come from a good place. But it's, you know, if you're listening to this and you don't know, it's like, well, fucking Google it. Like, there's like a list of 50 traits. I read that, and then like by like halfway through, I was like in tears. I'm like, oh, this is like something that I now understand. There's a name for it. It's vague and hard to describe. But now I think we're at a place where people are talking about it more comfortably. People talk about depression and anxiety, you know, with less stigma. That's like the next thing I think that people will hopefully develop more of an understanding of, and you know, ultimately it's about boundaries and emotions and relationships, and learning that about myself made me understand my parents better, made me understand why I, you know, what was wrong in my romantic and personal professional relationships, and it's still something, you know, to work on, you know, so
yeah, work in progress.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a minute. I'm trying. You know,
we're all doing the best we can.
Yeah.
Well, some of us could be doing harder, but you and me, we're doing the best we can.
I think we're doing okay. Hey, Micah, I just want to say I think you're doing great.
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should I start recording sometime?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
You know, that's a joke I like to make on a lot of podcasts I do. I'm like, all right, well, how long have we been going? Are we going to wind it up? I got a lot of gas left in the tank. I know you usually go for about an hour.
Yeah, no, I think
we've hit a lot of it, man. Like I said, it'll change your relationship with alcohol, having an alcoholic, you know, as a parent. And then seeing the, you know, the later years of their life in decline. And like I said, after he, you know, was found out he had cancer, it was spreading, it was all over. He almost died in the surgery to remove it. Then after that, like he really wasn't the same after, you know, like he came out of it like different. He had literally part of his tongue removed. He speaking, hearing him talk was different. He like lost a bunch of weight. And it became even harder to communicate with him and keep the relationship strong, you know. And yeah, so, you know, when I got the news, it's like, all right, well, hopefully, you know, it's, you know, what we all hope for. It's like, all right, well, hopefully they're not in, you know, pain anymore. You know, that's the silver lining on the cloud or whatever. You know, it's like, all right, now they're no longer suffering. They're in a better place. I don't know, you know, what you believe or what I believe. No one knows, I think, ultimately. But, you know, where does the energy go? Where does the, what is the soul? Where does the soul go? You know, like, what lasts? People remember how you make them feel.
Yeah. And when you see people from your small town that say, hey, Jimbo really made me laugh.
Yeah.
And Jimbo, you know, fixed my muffler and gave me a discount and he's a solid guy. Yeah. That is part of Jimbo's legacy. And that reinforces your memory of, you know, a complicated person. And it sounds like, you know, in addition to grieving him, you have a childhood that probably could merit some, not grief, but, you know, it's, we're all processing.
Well, you think about, well, why did I become a comedian? You know, like, is that something that you think about a lot? Well, yeah, we all watched Adam Sandler movies when we were kids and loved to laugh. But, like, do you think about why, like, you know, what pushed you to, like, actually go and do it instead of just quoting movies with your friends?
Well, it's probably all that severe trauma that I haven't shared with anyone yet.
Yeah.
But apart from that, no. I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, there was a van. There was no windows.
I think humor is a natural reaction to things that don't make much sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically butchering a Calvin and Hobbes quote, but there's a strip that I had hanging on my wall. It's Calvin and Hobbes walking through the woods, and Calvin is wondering why evolution would give humans a sense of humor. Like, what could it possibly help with to, like, laugh at things that don't make sense? And Hobbes said, if you couldn't laugh at things that don't make sense, you couldn't react to most of life. And, boy, that was a long way to go to not answer your question. But the point is, I don't know. I think it's, I'm a very emotional guy. I laugh a lot. I'm not afraid to cry in front of people as well. But, and also I think that I learned that from my dad, because he was such a very emotive person that, like.
Really?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
See, that's like the opposite for me. Like, my dad was like very on the surface. Like, yeah, everything's great. Cool. But never like showing that deeper level. Your dad was open and, you know, emotional with you, or like sadness, anger, the whole range of it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Parents, you know, I think we spend our lives trying to figure them out while we're like, oh, wait, maybe I should work on myself. And then you're like, oh, I'm middle-aged now.
And I'm just like them.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I better pay for this therapist appointment.
Yeah. And, well, you know, you like, I tend to like think about the why and like these questions like, well, why did I become a comedian? Why am I like drawn to this? Why do I rely on humor as a defense mechanism, a survival mechanism, a deflection mechanism? You know, like, what is that? You know, and why? And I don't know. I think it ultimately it becomes not as important. You know, it's like, well, you know, instead of like, I don't know, like you do need to think about your past and your life and the things that affected you. But then at what point you're like, all right, well, I just want to thrive. How do I get to do that? Like, I'm ready to like, you know, where do I get the abundance mindset and welcome in good things? And, you know, like, what do I got to put on my fucking vision board? You know, like, so, like, how do I, like, live in less of a state of stress and anxiety in my day to day, you know, and not have all the days pass by like an accident, and all of a sudden it's the next year, you know, and then you're, that's the life, you know. Like, what are you saying? Pay for the fucking therapist.
It's mostly the Adam Sandler movies, though. Yeah, that's the big influence.
Yeah, dude. So fucking funny. Like, I feel like I watched Billy Madison like every weekend for like a year, second to third grade. And sure. That just broke my brain.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Shout out to Happy Madison Productions.
Yeah. They're doing good stuff. I don't watch the new work, but, you know, just happy they're out there doing it.
I think we are... It says in my notes, wrap up. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Someone turned on a light over here. I think they're going to start playing music.
No, I think I've exhausted enough from you to turn this into a thing. Sounds like Jimbo had a big shadow over you. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that he was in your life. I'm sorry that it was cut short. You know, rest in peace to Jim.
Hey, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm sure wherever he is, he appreciates it too.
Is there any closing sentiment before we start plugging all our...
Yeah, before I tell you about my show at Pine Box Rock Shop. No, so I think, like I said, the most, you know, thing about grief for me, it's, like I said, been realizing that through the people I've lost, not just my father, you know, that it's taught me to be more... in touch with my emotions, share them more, process them more. That's what I've been talking about the whole fucking time, you know? So it's something that'll continue. And, you know, I feel like you just got to live every day to the fullest or die trying.
All right, now do it in your real voice so I know that you're being serious.
Could
you take the clown makeup off? That's been weird. I've been meaning to address that.
Get this nose and this curly hair out of here. And there's a rubber chicken over here. Not mine, but
there is an actual rubber chicken for the audience at home. The rest of the stuff was just
it's a goof.
The power of imagination. But I do have a rubber chicken in the studio.
Okay, all right. For real, closing thoughts. I don't know. I think, like I said, be good to people, but most importantly, be good to yourself.
Good message. Yeah, for sure, man. Pine Box Rock Shop, tell me about this show.
Okay, well, anyway, you can follow me on the socials. You go to my website. It's justinthompson.omg.lol. You'll find all my links there. I do have a monthly show here in Brooklyn.
That's actual?
Yeah.
That's your URL?
Yeah.
omg.lol? Yeah. Nice. Sounds memorable.
Yeah. Well, because I'm fucking social media. Justin Thompson, too. Surprisingly common names. I haven't been able to secure a good handle. No, I honestly change my Instagram handle and Twitter handle like every year or two because I have never been able to get the clean at Justin Thompson.
Sure.
So maybe let's pick a new one right now before we wrap it up. No. So I'm on there at Tomso Justin for the time being, but if you go to that website, you'll see all the links for that. Details for my show at Pine Box Rock Shop. What about you? What do you got to plug?
I do this podcast about grief.
Oh, cool. I'm going to be on that soon.
Yeah. I don't even know. You know, find me on Venmo. already are.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
At Micah_Walsh. You know, I'm on the internet. What I need you to do, if you're listening to this, folks, just rate it 5 stars. Write a review. Tell your friends about it. or, you know, just keep listening. And, yeah, that's about it. Justin Thompson, I appreciate your time. Thanks for telling me about about Jimbo.
Thanks, man. I had a great time. This is a much deeper conversation than I've ever had publicly with this. And I'm going to ask you more about your dad after we
hit
the stop button.
Well, of course. By all means, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again, dude.
So that was it for episode 32. I want to thank Justin Thompson for sharing his story. I want to thank everybody who's listening. I could do this without you, but it would be a lot lonelier. So I appreciate that everyone's listening. And as always, if you want to like, if you want to subscribe, I wouldn't tell you not to. Hell, I'd even tell you you could write a 5-star review if you're feeling so inclined. But I do appreciate everybody who's messaged me so far. I hope everyone's being good to themselves in the new year. New episodes coming in about a week. Until then, goodbye.